I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience, a podcast where dads can connect and openly share stories. On this episode of The Dad Experience, we talk to Rob Roseman in part one of two on reinventing yourself as a dad. We talk about his work on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, as well as being a professional poker player, and then all of a sudden becoming a stay-at-home dad. So we hope you enjoy part one of two of this exciting episode, Reinventing Yourself as a Dad. Here we are again with another exciting episode of The Dad Experience. A lot of talking to different dads out there has led us to other fathers and other dads to talk to, and been getting great connections and awesome connections. So this is one of them. Many of you might have listened to our episode with Zach Bush, the author, a couple weeks ago, or whenever you listened to us, a couple episodes ago, and he introduced us to today's guest. We're really excited about that. But before we introduce today's guest, I want to welcome Mike again to another episode. I know you know, sometimes you hear him, sometimes you don't. He's a busy dude, and his kids are busy with soccer, and it's almost the end of pool season. This is an ongoing joke, Mike. I'm never going to let you live it down. So I think we're going to get him a little more.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. What do you do with the pool now? Do
mine
I empty
is going,
it? I don't know.
It's getting closed tomorrow. So they won't have to hear from or suffer from any more of my conversations with you about the pool, my friend.
I'm just going to empty the, you know what? I'm just going to open the drain.
That's what I would do. Well, yours collapses, doesn't it? Or does it stay up all season?
No, it's that plastic.
Oh, all right. So
vinyl.
you can tear yours down. That's great. That's great. Awesome. Mine stays there. It's an eyesore for the year. But that's all right. It's worth it for those summer months. So everything's been going good though, Mike?
Yeah. Just, you know, school started back up. So, you know,
right on. Kids are doing well in school already. So good. They're enjoying
pretty good.
Teachers,
pretty
good things going on.
Yeah, all the teachers are really good. We just still have to worry about the kids getting sunburnt because they're so pasty white.
Well, I know, and I hope mom is applying the sunscreen, not you, because I know how you apply sunscreen. When we went to Europe, I remember that. I'll never forget.
Well, I don't want them.
Yeah,
to get
man,
streaked,
you got streaked really bad. You were like, it was brutal.
Looking like a red zebra.
You did. Well, Mike, I'm excited today because we've got an awesome guest. You excited? You want to introduce? You want me to introduce him here? All right.
Yeah.
Today we have
him.
Rob. Rob is a dad who seems to have reinvented himself quite a few times, actually, from working on the Mercantile Exchange in Chicago, participating in Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and making a pretty deep run in the World Series of Poker main event. I'm really excited to hear about that. I'll tell you that right now. All these experiences have helped him to become a stay-at-home dad, and we're really excited to talk about those things. And we haven't had many stay-at-home dads on the show. I think maybe, Mike, we've only had one, and it was pre-you. I think it was the old co-host, Matt, and I think that was the only stay-at-home dad we've had in a while. So it'll be great to get...
Yeah, I mean, I was briefly a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, you were, it'll be exciting to hear another perspective on that, you know, because everybody's
Absolutely.
Experience is a little different. So, Rob, welcome to the Dad Experience.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Adam and Mike, for having me. This is exciting. I heard a few of your shows this week, and I'm a big fan already.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Cool. Thanks for listening and thanks for participating. You know, we always like to hear real stories. We were arguing off air, not arguing, we were laughing off air about how a lot of times what I keep saying here is about how we like to hear real stories from real dads. It reminds us of the real world shows. So I'm sure many of our listeners will appreciate that.
True stories.
Except we're all talking on different parts of the country, right? And in different locations. I'm in a basement. Mike, where are you today?
Basement. I'm in the basement too. There should be a real world dad's edition. I would definitely participate in that.
We should do that. Maybe we will.
It could take place in the murky depths of basement pubs all over the U.S. Fantastic.
Yeah. So. Do we do it with kids or sans kids, though? You know what I mean? If they're a dad thing, we have to have the dad experience where just a bunch of dads have their kids for a weekend.
Yes.
That
could, always sans kids,
that,
dude.
No, but that could be...
You can't be drinking.
It could be sans kids, but it could be an interesting, like, you know, they have... what's that show where they travel all over the world as like partners travel across the world and try and do different
Amazing Race.
Different tasks. Amazing Race. That's it. Sorry. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I, it could be something like The Amazing Race, except you're all living in one house and you have to do different tasks. And then, you know, people get voted out of the house, like kind of like Survivor with the Amazing Race and all those good things. That could be an interesting show, I think. I think we're onto something.
I like it. I like it.
Could be funny. So Rob, you know, we always start our show off with, and we want to know, and our listeners like to know, who lives with you at home and kind of what's the makeup of your home?
Yeah. So upstairs sleeping or trying to sleep is my three kids. I have Cameron, my son, he's 6, he's in first grade. I have Brooks, he's 4 and in pre-K. And I have a 1-year-old daughter, little redhead named Remy. She is asleep upstairs, and my wife, Angie.
Nice. That's awesome. No pets?
Nice.
Oh, no. We can barely handle the kids. I don't know how people do pets.
Yeah, we don't have a dog here or anything anymore either, so it's we're kind of like that. I think we got our hands filled.
I got a stupid cat.
Yeah.
God, this freaking cat.
Mike, you're...
Somebody told me a cat can like live like 20 years. That's 10 more years.
Cat year. You're like a Howard Stern. He just like collects cats now, I think.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
That just makes it. It's really interesting to hear that. To hear that Howard Stern
collects cats.
Like, he's not the guy that I pictured collecting cats.
I think it was his wife's idea. And now you can't stop, I think. So.
Once you're hooked, you can't stop, terrible. I guess. Mike, you're in trouble. So the minute you get a second one, we know you're downhill from there.
No. Once this cat dies, no more pets. The boys want a dog.
Let's have a third kid. It's much easier.
Maybe we could talk about it, but you know, I never understood. I always wanted a dog as a kid. Mike and I, Rob, I don't know if you know, Mike and I grew up. We've known each other. Our families have known each other since I've been born and since he's been born. And I never could understand it. I was always jealous of Mike and his family. They always had a dog. And I would always say to my parents, I want a dog. I want a dog. And I never understood why. And now I'm a parent and I understand why. So it's you know, it's come full circle. So it's an interesting thing.
I think that's like the best thing about being a grandparent is you can watch your kids just and like laugh as they struggle through life because they went through it too, right?
They did.
My dad does it all the time. It's hilarious.
Yeah. You know,
he just stands back and just like shakes his head like, yup. Yeah. You're getting it now, man.
You know, the phrase that I hear all the time, and it's funny because apparently my wife and I were very similar when we were kids. We were little hellions. And I hear all the time. And
wait, you guys were hellions? No, you were.
No, her mom was too. Or her mom was too. My wife was too. So it's always funny when our oldest, like she's pretty active and she's a whip. Like she's really smart, but she's really active and she never wants to sit down. And I'm like, man, she's exhausting. And my mom goes, paybacks are tough, aren't they? And that's what I always hear Lauren's, my wife's parents say to her all the time. So it's funny to hear those things. So and hopefully another 30 years from now, I'll be saying the same thing. Hopefully it's 30 years, you know? So
with any luck.
Yeah.
It does seem like a great gig, grandparents, right? They just get all the perks.
I can't wait to be a grandparent. It's going to be awesome.
It does.
You want candy? Sugar? Sure. Here you go. Soda pop. All
right. Right before they leave the house.
Only half a can.
Right before they leave the house to go back to the parents' house, right?
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah, that'll be an interesting phase.
I can't wait to hear it from my kids. Now, don't feed them this. Don't feed them that. As soon as that door shuts, I'll be like, do whatever I want.
Right.
This is free babysitting. I do what I want.
So Rob, tell us a little bit about your early life, maybe, you know, a couple things that happened early on and that kind of led you down on your way to becoming a dad.
Yeah. So I had a normal, amazing middle class upbringing down in Miami, Florida. Just had a great group of friends, great parents, family. Ended up going to college at University of Michigan, kind of near you guys.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's okay. State, right?
Yeah, I did go to Michigan State. It's all right. I'm sitting in a green and white basement, so you know.
Nice. I transferred to Florida, so my true passion is down south.
Okay, we'll let you slide then.
I'm a hurricane and gator. Yeah, I had moved out to Chicago right after college to trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, which was a crazy run. Ended up in Vegas where I met my wife at 30, and she's from Indiana though. She's a nice Midwestern girl, but yeah, we kind of got married. I was 35. So we pretty quickly had kids, and now we're up to three, and I think we're ready to hit the pause button because it's a little bit crazy, but life is good.
Nice. That's cool. So that's early on. So, you know, you kind of sent me a little bit about your background and stuff. So your first experience, one of your major experiences, and I'm assuming it led, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and then into your poker stuff, but you were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? What was that? What was that like? And how did you land that or lead yourself into that?
That is it's a crazy story that happened in 1999, and still probably I can't go a week without hearing about it. So thank you for bringing it up. thank you, Zach, for telling you guys to ask about it. It was kind of the very beginning when that show just came out. I don't know if you guys remember. It was like almost like American Idol popular, just the craziest thing to have a game show on at night. There were little McDonald's was running a promotion where you could call in and qualify for the show. So somehow I got on, flew to New York with Regis when it was like, you know, the biggest thing, the number one rated TV show at the time.
Right.
I was at I had just started my job at the Chicago Merc, which is like the trading floor, just the craziest place on earth. So they didn't even believe that I was going out there. I said, if I'm not on TV on Sunday night, you guys can fire me on Monday. So I flew out, got on the show, never expected to really do much in terms of winning after, you know, you're sitting next to like Jeopardy champions and stuff. But I was able to get in the middle in the hot seat with Regis. And all the lights on me, the whole drama that they build up. So very exciting moment. And then the first question I got, and I'll ask you guys, we can pretend like you're on the show. Oh, my $100 question was, on what animal did Hannibal cross the Alps?
And we're going to take a quick break here. We'll get back to that question right after the break. But before that, we just wanted to remind you that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can get the Parents On Demand Network app on the iTunes and Google Play Store, where you'll find our podcast along with many other parenting podcasts. If you love the Dad Experience, stick around at the end of the show. We're going to tell you about another exciting podcast from the Parents On Demand Network that we're sure you're going to like. And more after the break with Rob.
On what animal did Hannibal cross the Alps? So if you, this is on YouTube immortalized, but you can see my face just go white because, you know, your first few questions, $100, it's what color is the sky? How many innings?
Right.
All game. Yeah. So I was just like, I mean, you could ask me my name and I couldn't have told you right when I heard that question because I had no idea. I ended up taking the 50-50. Well, let me tell you the choices. There are horses, llamas, elephants, and chihuahuas. So
yeah, who's that elephant?
All right, Mike, let's let Adam play along.
Mike, I had no clue. I was gonna call my lifeline, so
what were you gonna say?
So I took the 50-50. Well, we can keep playing. I took the 50-50 because I'm like, maybe that'll help. It was elephants and llamas, and again, I mean, I'm just like Hannibal, the Alps. I don't know. I just want to get this over with at this point. So I said, I'm going to go with llamas, Regis. That's my my final answer.
Oh no.
The dramatic pause. And like, it was just, you could just feel the blood rush. He's like, Robbie, I'm sorry. This has never happened before. The answer was elephants. And I was out before I got there, and it was crazy at the time. You know, I was 22 years old in New York City, waiting, I mean, my friends waiting for me to win, like, you know, $500,000, and I walked with zero. So
did they at least give you a cool consolation prize?
Was a humbling moment. Well, the best was, so that was aired Sunday night. On Monday, I go to the floor of the Mercantile Exchange, like, which is basically like a frat house on steroids and everything. It's just crazy. And at 7 a.m., I walk.
And that was what was featured in the, for some of our older listeners that probably remember, from Ferris Bueller's,
you
right?
Got it.
The places they stop in Ferris. Okay.
Ferris Bueller, right. Or Trading, yeah, Places, right. That same kind.
Right. Yeah. Both of them, know them. Great movies.
Oh, the best. And floor to ceiling are taped pictures of elephants when I walked in the door. It's maybe 50,000 pictures. So my boss sent his clerk to like Kinko's at 4 a.m. and said, I want you to get a million of these printed. So I got humbled pretty quick. Luckily, you know, Mike, you must have studied history in seventh grade. Like I apparently didn't, but a lot of
Dude, I didn't know either. I didn't know either. But I would have probably, I'm not going to lie, Rob, I probably would have, like, when I got the 50-50 to llamas or elephants, I would have probably gone with elephants because I don't think, I've never seen anybody ride a llama before.
Yeah, but a llama's got, you know, where, Rob, I think you're coming from, like, a llama's got fur, right? It's warmer in the
Mike,
mountains.
Again, right? I was like, you could have said, like, what is your last name? And once you heard that question with the lights on you.
You're nervous, so. You can't imagine.
Yeah,
that.
I was just, I mean, again, like Napoleon Dynamite came out 5 years later. I saw a llama. I said, oh, of course you can't ride that. So I did have a nice consolation prize about a year later. Rosie O'Donnell had a big talk show at the time. And she had me and another first question loser on the show. And we ended up both winning cars, Honda Civics. So it was a nice little redemption for us and worked out good.
Nice. That's a good car too.
Yeah. So I'm a big Rosie fan after that. She got a lot of heat and I was always a defender of Rosie O'Donnell.
I think she's funny.
So that yeah. kind of that experience and being under heat might have kind of led into your next venture, huh? Like with you'd let us know, and we kind of said at the top of the show that you had a deep run in the World Series of Poker. How did you go from, you know, being in Chicago and then Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and then now you said you moved to Vegas and then you did the World Series of Poker. How did all that those events transpire?
Yeah, so I was in Chicago 7 years, had a great run trading, and that kind of and wound its course, and I was looking for my next thing, and my friends, like a lot of kids, were playing, and you know, we played high school and college, and then after college home games, and then we started playing online poker. I somehow was able to qualify for the World Series of Poker online, like the dream that everybody has straight out of Rounders and Moneymaker and all that, and had a really deep run my second year playing it in 2006, which was like the pinnacle of poker, like maybe 8,700 people playing in the main event. And, you know, looking back, I barely knew what I was doing, but I guess compared to the people I was playing against, I had a nice edge, and like a lot of things, had a lot of luck and run good. So I played that World Series of Poker was like 8 days straight. It was just the craziest week of my life. And, you know, it just had an amazing run and was like, maybe I should give this a shot. I just turned 30. I was like, this could be, when else could I do something like this in my life? So I moved to Vegas and played poker professionally for what turned out to be almost 11 years.
Wow.
Holy crap. Now, Rob, what kind of poker? Like just,
so it's Texas No Limit Hold'em, just like they play, you know, like I said, it was, I think Rounders was the inspiration, 1998, that we all would watch and get excited about. And then we played at home, and that was like, it still is kind of the most popular game. So, you know, No Limit Hold'em. I played tournaments in the beginning, but then cash games as well. And yeah, it was a crazy experience that went longer than I ever thought it would, but I just kind of ran with it.
So that
sounds insane.
So that became like, that was your full-time job, was playing poker.
Yeah. You know, I moved out there single, like again, at 30, I was like, let me just try this. And I was like, I'll play full-time. I'll probably give it a year or two, and ended up like within 3 months of moving to Vegas, ended up meeting what turned out to be my wife, Angie. She's from Indiana. She had just moved there for work. And it was really like a kind of a, if, as long as you could avoid the pitfalls of being in Vegas and gambling, which, as you know, people that play poker know, poker is not really gambling like a lot of the other things are, sports betting, blackjack. So it turned out to be a nice little career and kind of complemented home life. We ended up having kids and it worked out good.
Wow. So how far was your run in the World Series of Poker?
So in 06, it was 23rd place I finished out of, I think it was like 8,700 people. So just ludicrous. It was the year Jamie Gold won like 12 million. So I was really close to, you know, I mean, it was just absolutely insane. Looking back, I like kept kind of a little journal, and my friend, this was almost when text messaging was kind of new, so just remembering my friends like back in Miami and Zach and everybody messaging me, is like, you don't even, you're just, your head is spinning, but you just kind of try and keep getting to the next day and keep advancing, and every time you advance the money goes up. So it was insane.
So when you walk into let's say you go back to Vegas now and you go to one of the casinos, when you walk into a poker room or some tables, do the people scatter and like leave or do they try and play you?
Yeah, you know what? I was just watching Rounders the other day, and the opening line is so good in it. He says, "Listen, here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first 30 minutes at the table, then you are the sucker." So I love that line, and it's true. It's like, I don't think people know you, but you can get a feel for who knows what they're doing pretty quickly. And, you're looking for the tourists that are there to have fun. And it's a great game when you're just playing with friends and the action is flowing. So it's a good time.
Right. Where were your favorite places to play over there?
I would usually play the Wynn Casino, the Bellagio, Venetian, all the big ones that you kind of hop around and you're looking for where are the best games. There's a whole art to it. It really is like, you know, somebody should do a documentary on the secret life of a poker player. Not as many dads running around doing it, but if you're 26 and you know, it's an awesome.
You got a lot of free time.
Yeah, right. If you can sleep till noon, do all these things that we can't do now, but it's.
Well, Rob, I'm curious, when you go to these the different casinos and they're aware that you're, you know, a professional poker player, do they like want you in there? I mean, are you, because of your skill level, are they more apt to like not want you there or?
Well, poker is different than poker. They could really care less because you're playing against other people versus the house. Now, if you were like a professional card counter, which there's a lot of people trying to do, they'll kick you out because they don't really want your business. Actually, my mother-in-law was like, she has an awesome story where she's banned from like the four queens because she was counting cards, counting blackjack. It's like her badge of honor. But for poker, they don't really, I mean, it's more of, you know, people want to play pros. And to be honest, like everybody will claim to be a pro. And that really just means, you know, they're trying to do something. But yeah, casinos treat poker differently than they do the other games.
Mm. Gotcha. Gotcha. So when you finish 27th, I don't know if it's like a breakdown of prizes or is it just winner takes all? Is that what it is? Or does it like break down or is it only like first, second and third or how does that work?
Yeah. So they pay out like the top 10% and every like, you know, incrementally goes up. So I had a real first place was 12 million, which was pretty crazy. 23rd was like almost 500,000. So that was
holy crap.
It was like a Happy Gilmore check moment. I was pretty stoked.
Yeah, I think I would have been really happy about that too. That's crazy. And then was that already being televised then on ESPN and stuff at that time?
So it was on tape delay, but it was starting to get, you know, they put it on there. So you see like my bust out moment is immortalized on ESPN. They have to edit it because it's not nearly as exciting as it looks on TV in real life. So.
So what you're saying is people can find you on three different locations, probably on YouTube somewhere, on the Rosie O'Donnell Show, on the Millionaire Question, and on the World Series of Poker.
Right, and every one of them, now that you mention it, they're all of me like busting out. So it's like, this guy, can he get anything right? But it's like you gotta put yourself in those positions, I think. So.
Well, I have to say, risks. I do think you got the poker right. If you managed to play professionally for, what you said, 11 years, I'm pretty sure you were successful with that one there, man. So any of those experiences, you know, whether it's Millionaire or being on national TV or being the poker player, did that kind of like set you up any for being a dad? Did that help with any of those experiences, do you think?
For sure.
Just about life experience. I mean, yeah. Anything particular that you could think of?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at the time you don't think it. And you know, when you don't have kids yet, you can't even like, I mean, I'm around a lot of like, guys that didn't have kids, single or had girlfriends, like you, we don't even know what it's like to have kids before you have them. So, but looking back for sure, it's just like the resilience that you need. You need to be around people that are, you know, not necessarily mentally stable, which are my kids a lot of the time. And I'm sure everybody's dealing with, you know, failure and having to get right back up, because I think that's like the best thing that trading and poker and all these things teach you is like, you're going to lose, you know, I mean, I won every year that I played, but I was still losing probably 40% of the time. So like, that's a feeling that you've got to get used to. And I think with kids, you're constantly just getting, you know, beat up. And, you know, there are these moments where they hug you and they're falling asleep in your arms where it's like, it's easy and blissful. But, you know, when they're fighting or whining, that's the kind of thing that I think you need to, you know, thicken your skin and really just almost have like a stoic mentality where you're just like, all you can handle is, all you can control is how you deal with it. So I try to be mindful of that when I'm parenting, but like all things, it's simple, not easy, and easy to talk about with you guys. But if you saw me an hour ago, it was like trying to get the kids to bed was a bit crazy.
I think that's all of us. Which is why we record at night when yeah. kids go to bed. So, but you know, it's interesting. You were saying before that you were playing poker when you had your kids, right? You were still playing professionally, right? When you had yes. your kids. So how did that work? Did you play poker during the day? Was it a nighttime thing? Was it more successful at night? How did you manage that? That would probably be a tough work-life balance because you really don't have office hours. It's not a 9-to-5 job. How did you and your wife kind of manage that?
Yeah, it was tricky. I used to play at night more, and I think it probably is more profitable at night. But Vegas is a 24/7 town, so eventually I was almost playing like a 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. kind of gig. But my wife has, you know, she's amazing. She has an awesome job where she has the normal hours, so I could kind of, you know, be a little more flexible with my hours. But like you said, it did start to take a toll a little where, you know, your kids are going to get up at 6 a.m. So, like, if you're going to sleep at 3 and you want to get up with them, it's going to be a little more painful. So I did try to adjust my schedule to be more suitable with their lifestyle. But it's a challenge, and it is kind of a young man's game, I think, for that reason.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got to have some killer comps in Vegas then, don't you?
All my friends ask me, but, yeah, those are all expired, yeah.
Those are all expired now. You don't do it much anymore.
Well, you know what? They're going to want you. They want the guy that's going to come in there and lose a lot. Like that's the
right,
guy that
right.
the Caesar's suite and stuff. So,
gotcha. That's understandable. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. This concludes part 1 of 2 of reinventing yourself as a dad. Tune in next week for the other part of this episode with Rob. We talk a little bit more about parenting and being a stay-at-home dad, along with his app, Kickstart Reading. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. And also, you can follow us on Instagram, The Dad Experience. Follow us on Twitter, Dad EXP Podcast, or send us an email, experienceanddad@gmail.com. Have a show idea? Want to be on the show? Have a question for a guest? Let us know. Hit us up. Also, check out our new phone line. Leave us a voicemail. Find that number in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to The Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents On Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes on the go.